In the last 10 years, our field has gone from an unknown specialty to a household name. This brings unprecedented opportunities, but we need to rise up to meet them and give our patients the care that they deserve. In order to help others get better, we need to be better. This podcast will help you to become more confident with your patients, more successful in your practice or business, and a leader in pelvic health. And we're going to have some fun along the way. Join us as we rise together. We're Jesse and Nicole Cozine, founders of Pelvic Sanity Physical Therapy and the creators of the Pelvic PT Huddle. And this is Pelvic PT Rising.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Pelvic PT Rising Podcast with Jesse and Nicole Cozine. Hey Nicole.
Hello.
Talking today about when you are ready to hire another clinician. So if you're a business owner or a wannabe who has been thinking about this, we hope this episode is going to give a little bit of a behind the scenes look at what you guys should be thinking about. Before we dive in, I've got a pair of announcements for you. Although actually, Nicole, we should talk about the amount of poop that came out of Clay this morning.
You guys, this is the first time that Jesse and I looked at each other and we're like, oh my gosh, how does this little body produce so much poop? It was coming out of everywhere. It was in his crib. It was on his sleep sack. I mean, it was everywhere. And I don't even understand how that happens. And then I'm trying to act like it's not a big deal because, you know, I'm so obsessed with like making poop fun and like it's okay and like, yay, it's coming out. This is so wonderful because I don't want him to have a complex around poo when he gets older with constipation and stuff since that's so like common. And so I'm like trying to be like, oh my God, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And at the same time, have this like happy face, like everything's okay. Nothing to see over here.
We're just painting in brown today. It was like, it was Nicole. That had to have been like 20% of his body paint.
I mean, his little stomach seems so much flatter. And I was like, oh, pooping is great no matter what age you are.
Right. I'm worried he's going to try to do it again because he loved taking a shower with me after that. So now I'm a little bit concerned. So that is the Cozine morning, literally a shit show today.
Literally a shit show.
So wanted to give you a little behind the scenes thing. I also have two announcements before we dive in. One is your vagus nerve treatment masterclass, Nicole. I know you're getting super pumped about that. More information and the wait list for that is at pelvicptrising.com/vagus, but tickets go on sale on the 23rd. You're recording it live on the 30th of this month.
Tickets? Tickets go on sale. There is no tickets.
We'll give you some tickets. Maybe we should do tickets.
Maybe we should. Hey, maybe there'll be a golden ticket and then you get to win another masterclass.
There you go. So all the things that we think about here, guys, but all that stuff will go on and doors will open on the 23rd. Doors will open. That was a better thing to say.
Doors will open on the 23rd and the actual class will be on the 30th.
Awesome. So get on the wait list for that. We've already had 300 plus of you guys on the wait list. That's going to be really, really fun to do. Second thing is, if you are a business owner who's thinking about hiring or who has hired and is now running into the challenges of having hired, make sure you guys are checking out the Accelerator program. It is coming up soon. We're going to be launching the third cohort of that. So if you're a business owner, that is our signature six-month coaching intensive. We've got taken over 200 people through that. We're mostly through the Accelerator from this cohort. And it's been incredible, Nicole, to see the changes that people are making in their business in that. So if that's something you're interested in, that is at publicptrising.com/accelerator. So all the housekeeping, all the announcements I've got for you guys. Nicole, what is the first thing you should be asking yourself if you are wondering, am I ready to hire?
Well, certainly there is a large amount of self-reflection that needs to go on before you take this leap. The things I want you to think about are, why do you want to do this? And make sure it truly is where you want to go, because we always say that making the decision to hire and add really any staff, but certainly a clinician, if you want to grow beyond yourself, everything about your business changes. It's as big of, if not bigger, of a decision on to start your practice in the first place. Your role changes, your day-to-day changes, your level of responsibility changes, your headaches change. All of the things that you're doing right now are not going to look anything like they do when you hire.
So it's not just the easy answer. And so the things that we typically see, Nicole, are sometimes people get a long wait list and they start feeling bad about it. And then they hire just because they're busy or because they've heard from somebody else out there that it's just the next step or it's easy money or employees are just suckers that are going to make you money while you sit on a beach somewhere. And none of that is a good reason to start. None of that is a good reason to hire somebody. And none of it's true, frankly, as a reason to do that. So make sure that this is a really deliberate thing. Every time we do our retreats, Nicole, we always come back to why did you start your business in the first place? For example, a lot of the people in our mentorship programs have young kids. One of the reasons they started their practice was in order to spend more time. Well, if you hire somebody to bring them on, it's not going to give you more time right away. It's going to actually cause you way more time until you get everything in place, until you make sure that everything is square financially, until you get that person onboarded. You're going to have a period of 6 to 12 months where you probably have more work. And is it really, is the juice worth the squeeze on that? Maybe, maybe not. You have to decide about why you started your business and where you want to be over the next, you know, period of time in the business.
Yeah. And I think it's a good point, Jesse, you just made about like, it doesn't happen right away. Like there are things, as prepared as you think you can be, there will be things that will be like, oh shit, like if that worked for me when it was just me, but that doesn't work now when there is somebody else in the mix. And we've just seen it so many times. And so that's where we really, really, really want you to have some self-reflection on why you started your business in the first place. And frankly, some serious self-awareness on, is this the right time for you to do it? And the answer could be totally yes. You do not have to be in a perfect business in order to hire somebody. So we don't want to sugarcoat it that way either. That it, you can hire at points when you aren't perfect in some business systems and stuff like that. But man, you really have to be clear that you do want to grow beyond yourself because it is a huge fucking deal.
Right. So first of all is that self-reflection on why. The second, Nicole, is ideally you would get to spend a little bit of time in Happy as Little Clam as a solopreneur before going on to the next thing where you do have a full schedule. You're getting your ideal patients on autopilot. You are making as much financially as you want to and need to. You're paying yourself. You've created a buffer account. You're funding retirement. You are working the days and times that you want. You've truly optimized your job. And then at that point, you can say, hey, there is still something that I'm feeling unfulfilled with, or I want to continue to grow, or I want to serve my community better, or I want to provide an amazing job for somebody that I couldn't find. Those are all great reasons to do it, but it really helps. Not like you have to, like you said, Nicole, have a perfect business before, but if you're really feeling unsettled or you're still really hustling, it's hard to go into that feeling really settled about that decision.
Yeah. And so again, there is no set amount of time that you need to stay in Happy as a Little Clam. And I would say that that is one of these points that could be an exception, right? You don't have to hit it there, but it really does help to at least strive for that and to make sure that you're hitting at least the majority of those things that we just listed.
Next thing we have here, and this is something we've changed our minds on, Nicole, as we've done more and more coaching and worked with more people, but we really do feel like you need some sort of admin help before you're going to bring on a clinician. And again, if that's not in the cards for you, if you decide not to, all of these are suggestions, they're not rules, but people don't necessarily understand that when you bring on another clinician, your time is going to be massively impacted because you still have your patients. You're probably trying to go out and do more marketing to fill that person's schedule. You're now doing all of the admin for not one but two clinicians, all of the rescheduling, all of the new patient calls, all of that stuff, and something is going to suffer with that, right? So either you need to really make a decision, I'm going to basically cut patient care down to the bone, which you may or may not be able to do financially, or you may or may not be able to do just personally and say goodbye to patient care. But if you don't, then marketing is going to suffer, or onboarding your person is going to suffer, or the administrative side is going to suffer. So it doesn't necessarily mean you need a full-time admin. That can be a helper, the way that we talk about it in some of our programs, that is just doing some big projects for you and isn't involved in the day-to-day. That might be, you know, actually bringing in somebody to be able to do that. But it's really difficult to run a practice at full volume with two clinicians without having any admin help and trying to do it all yourself.
Right. Or putting the new clinician in the position where they have to do admin work.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Just straight up, just don't do that. That is one of the biggest mistakes that we see. And it was interesting. So I was listening to, occasionally I'll get into these like Gary V kicks where I'm listening to his podcast all the time. And then I get annoyed with him and then I stop. But I'm on this kick now and I was listening to a podcast and he was talking about when he first started his big social media company, right? He had done wine stuff before and now he's decided that like, hey, this personal brand thing is really going to be a thing. And everybody was telling him to hire a content creator. Hey, we really need to double down on the social media stuff. Like, let's do it. And he said in this latest podcast I listened to, he's like, you know, want to know the first person that I hired? I hired, and he said, a motherfucking admin. Because he knew that what he was about to do was going to change the way that his time was looking. And so, you know, it goes across businesses too, that hiring an admin really is that important because your time is going to change and your role is going to change in the business. You know, it was just interesting to see even something from a different discipline, that same advice.
Yep. So that will make things a lot easier for you. Again, it's not always, it's not set in stone. None of these are, but it will be an easier transition if you've got somebody helping on the administrative side and you're not trying to do that. What we also see is people who hire that clinician, Nicole, and then immediately have to start looking for an admin. And now you're not only onboarding and training one person, you're trying to do it for two at the same time, makes it a real challenge. So to have some admin help, if at all possible. Next one we have here, Nicole, it's just the patient volume to be able to do this. So, you know, there's no hard and fast rule here either, but I would suggest you should be totally full with a wait list as you're thinking about hiring. If you haven't been able to fill your own schedule yet, then trying to fill your schedule plus another person is going to be a real challenge.
Absolutely. At that point, too, remember, you're going to basically be stopping giving yourself evals, and you just need to be certain that you have the marketing systems in place to now sustain two, whatever, however many clinicians or an additional clinician on the schedule. Because it's one thing to be able to get an initial bolus of patients, but do you have the time and the systems in marketing to sustain that level of lead volume that you're going to need to fill another person's schedule?
You know, especially for those of you guys who have those long-term patients and most of your schedule, especially if it's not very open, might be filled with longer-term people, you're not getting very many evaluations. So even though you have a wait list, even though it feels like you're really busy, you need to be asking yourself, do I really have the evaluation volume to fill somebody? Because they're not going to have the benefit that you do of having some of these longer-term or chronic pain people who are filling the schedule week after week. You're going to actually have to fill them the hard way one by one with evaluations. So do I have those? But then also recognize that at least during that transition time, you're likely going to be stopping evaluations yourself and putting them all onto your new person. So that can balance out and say, hey, we can fill a little bit faster during that time. But then again, on the financial side, that means that you're seeing less patients. Your schedule might get a little sparse and you need to be able to handle that. So that goes into kind of that buffer, Nicole, financially, is if you're doing this, the buffer that you have so that you're not financially concerned every time your person's schedule doesn't fill or they have a cancellation or they have a forfeit, somebody drops off, right? We really shouldn't be so close to the edge that we're really concerned about the finances of the business on the day-to-day either. And that's an important thing to be thinking about. Now, it doesn't have to be a massive buffer. You don't need $100,000 sitting in a thing in order to hire somebody. But we need to be able to tolerate the fact that you might be paying somebody and they're not seeing their full caseload of patients. Can you swing that? And so one of the questions we often ask to our people financially is it scary or is it dangerous? You'll hear us say that a lot. You know, is it scary to hire somebody or is it actually dangerous to the business where you might not be able to make ends meet during that time? And or do you have the financial wherewithal to withstand that?
Absolutely. And then just going back to patient volume, just for a half a beat, you know, I feel like everyone always asks, well, how do I know? How do I know that I have that volume? And this is a very broad generalization and rule of thumb only. And we would go into this in our coaching programs very specifically for you and your business and looking at all of your past numbers, which you should know, by the way, if you're going to hire. But it is about 15 to 20% of the patient visits that you have should be evaluations.
Yep.
As a rule of thumb.
So if you're trying to get somebody to be full with 40, you're probably thinking like 5 to 6 evaluations a week in order to sustain that. If you want them to grow to 40 faster, then you're going to need more than that, remember? So you can do a little bit of the math around that. That really does determine on your clinical ethos and whether you're actually getting the appointment to eval ratio, right? Because if you're seeing on average people for 4 visits and then they're falling off, then you're going to need a hell of a lot more evals than if you're seeing them for 10 visits, right? So that's going to make a massive difference in what you're doing. But rule of thumb is a pretty good one, Nicole, is that 15% would be a good one. Other things here is just make sure that you've got an offer that is competitive, that is fair, and that is profitable.
Profitable. Let's talk about this for a half a beat. There are, and probably our entrepreneur group, and if you're not in that group, you should be. It's on Facebook. It's free. It's the Pelvic PTOT Entrepreneur group on Facebook. One of the biggest things that we see on there is like, oh, how should I compensate this clinician? And we start talking about it in percentages for God knows why. And sometimes it is way over what, honestly, a successful, profitable, solid business should be paying an employee. And so the rule of thumb here is that any clinician that you bring on should be generating about 3 to 4 times their salary and revenue.
Right. They should be generating 3 to 4 times in revenue what you're paying them, which makes sense if you actually think about what the operations of a business mean, right? So if they're generating 3 times what you're bringing in, so let's say you're charging $150 and you pay somebody $50, well, first of all, you're not really paying them $50 because you've got payroll tax, you got other stuff on top of that. That's probably about 10% on top of that. So you're paying them $55. But one part of what they make goes to them. One part of what they make goes to the overhead of the practice. One part goes to taxes. And hopefully there's a little bit left over for you. In this case, there wouldn't be. And so this is why you want to make sure that your profit margin stays where it needs to be. You will take a dip when you bring somebody on. But one of the things that we see is just people paying unsustainable amounts. Even if you just say, oh, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, I only get 50%, or I'm only going to pay them 50%. It's like, well, by the time you add in payroll taxes and you add in the fact that you might be paying for late cancellations or no shows, and you add in all the extra expenses that go with having that person, and then you had to go talk to an employment attorney, and then you had to increase your linen supply, and maybe you even had to move and get a bigger office.
And insurance and all kinds of stuff that changes.
You might be losing money on that person. We've literally seen people where it's like, you are losing money for every appointment that your staff member is seeing.
Like literally, you guys. Like we have had to coach people on and show them that these numbers. So when you see other people, you might say, well, other people do it. I see it all the time. It's like, right. One of two things is happening. Either that business is actually failing, right? Because they're not profitable. You can still have a lot of revenue and you're still, your profit cannot be sustainable. Okay. A, or B, there's another bankrolling situation going on, like they, where they don't have to make money, where they don't, it doesn't matter. And then they can pay their people whatever they want. But I don't know about you all, but at Pelvic Sanity, like one of the reasons that we do this is for our family money. Like we don't do anything else. I mean, we have Rising, but that's it. Like it's Pelvic Sanity.
Right. We're not getting to pay our people out of our trust fund.
Right. No, right? It's so not. And that's fine if you have one, right? And that's cool. And then you could afford to pay people more, but don't look at somebody else, at what someone else is paying and be like, oh, well, they're paying so high, I have to do that too. The answer is no, you do not. And you need to have a sustainable business so that it exists 5 years, 10 years down the road.
And so you can continue to pay those employees, right? If you don't have a business that does this, and by the way, just so you guys know, like in sales and online stuff, and even like sales positions, you're expected to generate 10 times what you're paid in revenue. So that's industry-wide, this is actually relatively low, but you need to be making sure that you're protecting yourself financially so that you can have a business for decades and you can create amazing jobs for decades.
And you can give people raises. If you're on the lower end of the 3 to 4 times, like you can't give people raises without dipping into your profitability. Like it's just math at some point, you guys. So please make sure that you're getting your advice from somebody that is smart and understands and that has a successful actual business. And don't just looky-loo over on people on Instagram and be like, well, those people are paying a lot. It doesn't mean that they have a healthy business.
Right. Yeah. It's like, show me your financials and then I will decide.
And then we'll decide. Right? Yeah. Seriously. Because at the end of the day, it is math. It's literally math, you guys.
So the other aspect of that offer is just making sure that it's competitive, right? You want it to be something that is fair in the area. So is it similar to what they could be making at an outpatient ortho place? But also, it doesn't have to be crazy high. It doesn't have to have a ton of benefits associated with it, right? Some of the benefit of working for a small business is the fact that you get the kind of things like hour-long patient sessions, limited documentation, mentorship, a quiet, awesome place to work, getting to work directly with you as the business owner. All of those things are intangible benefits. So don't feel like you have to have this massive package that somehow competes with your local hospital program on medical benefits and 401k and fucking pet insurance.
Yeah, which people have, by the way, and like all these benefits that look good on paper, but like also the person might not even need or use.
So just realize that it does not have to be some kind of crazy offer, but you do have to craft an offer that you feel really positive and solid about. It's one of the things we talk about a ton in the Rising program and actually practice, making sure that you've got a solid offer with folks. And then the last thing here I have got, Nicole, is having the time and bandwidth to actually onboard your person.
Yes, I think the biggest mistake that you can make is be so busy yourself with patient care and so busy yourself with either training an admin or not having an admin or something, or even just personally super busy and not doing the appropriate amount of onboarding and training that employee. It feels bad. As on the flip side, as the employee, you want to walk into a space, even if it's small, even if you are the only other person that they're working with. They need to feel like there's structure, like you have a plan, like you've done this before, even if you haven't, and that you care about their overall well-being at your clinic. And sometimes when we hire too soon or without coaching or mentorship in business, we end up really fucking this up. And then people don't feel safe. Then they start acting funny, right? Or they leave. And then it's just a big, huge clusterfuck. And it's all because, if we take this radical responsibility, it's all because we didn't set our person up for success. And we have to be able to, especially with, like Jesse was talking about, with that financial buffer, with your patient volume, be able to block the time to be able to onboard these folks appropriately.
And that's a whole podcast for another day when we start talking about onboarding, but 100%, Nicole. And I can't tell you how many times we've worked with folks who ended up either having somebody leave prematurely or who actually had to let somebody go because they didn't get this right in the beginning. This is critical. We can't miss this. And I think it goes back to what you said, Nicole, is actually putting yourself in the employee's shoes for a minute. Instead of just taking this huge sigh of relief, oh, thank God I had this huge wait list and now you can take all the evals. Here you go. Good luck. Right? What is the benefit of being an employee? It is structure. It is mentorship. It is feeling safe. It is being able to, you know, leave at 5 o'clock and not have to worry about the business. And now you're throwing them into the deep end and taking away all of the reasons that they wanted to work for you in the first place. No wonder it's going to fracture a relationship, right? And, you know, we're actually really grateful. Our first hire, we didn't do a great job with this. She happened to be an amazing person, was with us for 5 years, but it wasn't because we were good at this at the beginning.
Right. And in fact, she actually pushed us. I do really appreciate our communication, though, because I really do feel like we trusted each other to know that we both wanted to do a good job. And the communication was huge. And like the ability for us to be able to have those conversations to be like, yeah, this is super jacked. We need to fix it immediately. And we're going to change everything that we told you to do yesterday. But ultimately, it was good because we had that trust and we had the open communication and I was present and there to be able to have those conversations, because it really, you can really mess this up and it's not fair to the person that you're bringing on.
And it always ends up going sideways at some point if you do that, right? And so it's so important. And frankly, guys, this is why we do mentorship. We create the resources that we wish had been available to us when we were going through this stuff ourselves. You know, we've now been doing this for 8 years. We've learned it the hard way. We've helped 500 plus businesses and seen it N equals 500 at this point. And so we want to just make sure that you put yourself in a good position so you can have a great relationship with your employee from the beginning. And having some of these things in place are almost prerequisites to making sure that somebody does feel like they're coming into an established company, that they know what you know what you're doing, that you've got the patient volume to fill the person, that you've got administrative help, that you're not just abdicating your responsibility in your business and saying, oh God, thank you, goodness you're here, help, but you actually have the ability to do all that. And so those are some of the things to be thinking about as you're making that decision to hire, deciding whether you're ready. And it is just so important to be feeling really good and confident and have your foundation shored up before you do. And if you hired, you know, there's nothing that is that you can't go back and fix. So if you're feeling some kind of way or you've hired, you didn't have all this stuff, we understand. We certainly didn't. We had to go back and fix a lot of things, but I hope this is motivation then to go back and do that. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't go back and fix some of these or shore them up, but man, if we can take a few minutes and get these right now before we hire or get them right before our next hire, it sure makes things a lot easier.
1000%.
So guys, hope this has been really helpful for you. If you want more help from us, make sure to check out the Accelerator program. Link will be in the show notes. But as always, we appreciate each and every one of you listening. We'd love to keep this conversation going.
And let's continue to rise.